Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to another Bard's Virtual Poetry Reading in connection with BardCon Virtual. Right now it's Friday night at 7 o'clock. I'm James P. Wagner, one of the publishers for Local Gems Press. Nick Hale will probably be joining us in a minute, the publishing partner. So this is going to be a bit of a shorter episode than ones we've done in recent weeks, because this is not featuring any particular anthology or publication. This is kind of an advance open mic, in the sense that obviously not everybody is calling in randomly to open mic, but they've been sent in advance. But it's, it was more of an open theme because it's not in conjunction with any actual anthology. So we've got a bunch of good readings for you tonight. That might be Nick Hale, who's just calling in now. Is that you, the one and only Nick Hale?
I think so. I better be the one and only. I don't want to see any imposters around here.
Yeah, that's true. It's also I definitely knew it was you because I recognized the phone number, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah, you definitely
had
it
for like 20 years.
Something like almost 20 years. Well,
yeah.
And through three different states, too. No, four different states. How about that?
17 years, actually.
Well, if you want to get all technical about it.
Yeah,
so,
that's almost 20.
So we've got a bunch of readings for tonight's somewhat shorter episode. Most of these people have actually already been featured on the Bard's Virtual Poetry Readings at least once, a couple of them twice. Yeah, so this might be the third time for some. The first one we're going to hear from is the tried and true Leslie Tyson, co-facilitator for Poets Anonymous. And I believe this is her second time being featured on the Bard's Virtual Poetry Reading, so let's give it up for Leslie.
Leslie Tyson, reading from the Nova Bard's 2015 anthology. The poem is Stale. Word hangs in the air like two-day-old cigarette smoke, overlaid on the historic aroma of bacon. While brick of artisan bread waits for incentive to skate across its own crumbs, and furnace blows warmth that chills air unbreathed. Table forgets the story of dried circles of spilled wine. Pictures relax off square with no vibration of voices to keep their attention. Refrigerator hums incessantly. Cap waits thirstily for water. And silence waits to be broken, holding the echo of a closing door as a talisman.
So that was from the first ever Nova Bards anthology.
Yeah. It feels like a really long time ago. That feels like it was 17 years ago. And it has been a long time since I've heard that poem.
Leslie has been since the beginning with Nova Bards, or, as far as the anthologies go.
Yeah, and I've heard that poem several times, but it has been quite a while. I think a few years since I've heard it, because Leslie has read it at a few Poets Anonymous readings and at the Nova Bards launch, obviously.
Yeah, no, I remember the reading, in 2015. I remember that poem actually being read the first time. I remember liking it then, and I like it now. It is funny to see, though, when I think about that reading, I'm thinking about where it was in the banquet room, at that Mexican restaurant, and, jump forward to the five-year anniversary, and we're, at the Courtyard Marriott doing
yeah.
it. So it's just, it's always funny how, these communities start off small and then they just grow and grow, and eventually it's like, because you don't know where to put everybody.
Yeah, I think also for that launch, I had a little bit of tempered expectations because that room was packed, and we sold out of books really fast. So I was not expecting as many people to come, I think, as actually showed up. So it was great. It was an excellent reading.
Yeah, I know. Well, the anthology launches we've done, have, you know, they've always been, you know, surprisingly wonderfully attended. And, you know, it took a global pandemic for us to finally have one that actually was kind of light.
Yeah. Well, and it's all credit to the people who show up to these events, because they're the ones who are bringing the energy and the people, obviously, because we can't have an event without these great people showing up and making it interesting and exciting, because that's the great thing about an anthology is you get a little bit of everything. And so it never gets old or never feels one note, because everybody brings a little bit of a different thing to the table.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I for one have been very grateful for all the different places that, you know, doing the anthologies has taken me. Because, for example, this next reader who's going to come up is Tony Gentry, and he was somebody who was in the Virginia Bard Central reading that I did for the first time, you know, this October, going down to the Richmond area. And, you know, we'll be doing it again, obviously, but it was, you know, a new place with a new anthology, and got to meet a bunch of new people. So Tony was one of them. So let's listen to his poem.
River Shadows. Have you seen the somber loom of winter trees lay stripes on clear water? Maybe a trout stream after snow? The pencil line jagged along the rocky bed, overdrawn by a skittering, rippled lid. Like time, what flows. Like hurt, what won't. A day underway, a smudge beneath that will not budge or sway. The current ignites and scatters. The shadows lay down the law. Or is it two truths that interplay? You go, you stay. Stubborn rule that cannot hold the flow at bay.
Wow. You know, it just goes back to what we constantly talk about with these, because I'm, you know, I feel like incredibly blessed and privileged to just be exposed to so much talent out there. And, you know, like the anthologies in the different regions are just a great way to meet, you know, people we wouldn't have otherwise. I mean, you know, every single time we do one, I'm always just, you know, blown away by, you know, just how talented everybody is, you know, and I know that we say that so often that, you know, people are going to think we're just being cheesy, or like, you know, or they hear it so many times that they think like we don't, you know, maybe we're just saying it and don't actually mean it, but like, no, I really actually mean it.
Oh, you say that to all the poets, don't you? Yeah, I know what you mean, and I feel like a broken record sometimes, because one of the things I say a lot is I'll get people who come to readings or groups, workshops that I'm hosting, and they'll apologize before they start reading, and then they'll proceed to read something amazing, maybe even the best thing I've ever heard in that moment. And it's like, you know, what do you have to apologize for? That was amazing. What do you think sucked about that? And a lot of times, because we're our harshest critics, but also people tend to not recognize the talent in themselves sometimes, and even just like the local talent they have around them, I guess because we get so focused on titles and prestige, that it's easy to overlook what somebody without, you know, 15 degrees and 12 laureateships can do.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's, you know, a big part of it is like, you know, a lot of people, when it comes to the creative side of things, people are creating all the time, but, you know, there's like this attitude for some people where they feel like almost like they're not supposed to be doing it because they're not like somehow certified, or like, you know, they didn't get like permission from whatever powers it be, you know, or to tell them to do it or something. And, you know, but I, you know, like you say, people are their own worst critics in that regard, because there's, you know, there's so much, you know, I can't tell you how many I mean, I don't have to tell you, you've been there with me at most of the launches, but, you know, how many, you know, first time readers, you know, who've been up, you know, in front of an audience for the first time, who it's like, you know, wow, I really can't believe that was their first time.
Yeah. I recall a spilled ink reading once where somebody came up and it was her first time reading, and she said, "I'm sorry if this is terrible. I just wrote this in the back," and then proceeded to read something that sounded like she practiced it for a week straight before getting up there and reading it. Like, wow, you just wrote that? First of all, it was a great poem, but then the delivery was fantastic. And so sometimes you don't need to apologize for yourself. It's just amazing how much that happens, though. And then I feel like I sound cheesy because I say that over and over again, you know.
No, I know. Yes, yes. Oh, yes. Apologize. How dare you? How dare you express yourself creatively? You know.
You know? Yeah, really. And poetry is not brain surgery.
Yeah. How dare you assemble? You know. Yes. You need to have. You need to have your mouth poetry insurance before you can, you know, get up and start reading.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and I've met people who are like, "Oh, I'm not a poet. I'm just an engineer, or you know, software developer, or you know, X title that, you know, profession." And really, I've seen some great poetry out of engineers and software developers. There's something about being in that mindset that really lends itself well, especially to forms.
Oh yeah, well, same part of the brain. But yeah, I also love how in that category they put you know poet above the engineer part. Like you know, oh, I'm just an engineer. You know, you know, like
yeah.
that poetry is the thing to aspire to be out of the two of them. Which, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, poetry is aspire to be really good at, but you know, I do love like the almost magical element people sometimes ascribe to poetry, as if like it's just this elusive thing that is just beyond you unless somehow you have, you know, like the right degree or something, you know?
Yeah, someone should tell the rest of society about that.
Yeah, seriously. No, like, I mean, I agree. You know, some of the most powerful poetry ever comes from people who aren't traditionally trained as poets. They're, you know, engineers or chefs or landscapers or doctors or, you know, every other profession out there who they also happen to do poetry. I mean, you know, the idea that you must be completely trained as a poet to be a poet, like this must be like your, you know, entire life. You know, I mean, well, you know, think about Einstein. You know, he was just a, you know, a clerk in a patent office, you know, when he came
yep.
up with relativity. And there were tons of people who, you know, doing that level of physics was literally their profession, and they didn't do what he did. So, yeah, you don't necessarily need to be in the profession.
Exactly.
So the next reading is, this will be his third time on the Bard's Virtual Poetry Reading since we started this during, you know, that little thing that's happening out there. Robert Fleming, and this one is his reading from Poets to Come, I believe.
Robert Fleming, reading from Poets to Come, page 120. A text went forth every minute. The first letter inserted into the text became part of the text. Letters next to each other and on the same line sometimes formed a word and became part of the text. When letters and numbers were insufficient to express what needed to be expressed, the texter inserted an emoji. That became part of the text. The texter, who became the sender, was grateful that they could not see nor hear the receiver. But that did not become part of the text. When the texter clicked on send, a lot of zeros and ones went forth to a receiver. And the text was happy to have gone forth to connect the sender and receiver, who were happy to have texted. Alas, to be in different places and be silent.
What I love about that one is how it deconstructs just the process of the text, but also sort of the feelings or the motivations behind it. Like, you know.
Yeah, I know. One thing about Robert's work that I've seen a lot is, you know, he writes a lot about technology, and, you know, he's kind of like an outlier when it comes to technology, but that can definitely be, you know, a good and interesting thing because, you know, technology does kind of take over our lives sometimes.
Yeah. But probably my favorite part was the sender was grateful that the receiver, oh man, I forget how it was worded, but the receiver could not see him or something. Oh man, sorry Robert, I'm butchering your poem and I just heard it, but that was my favorite part.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, because, you know, you look at a lot of like science fiction from 20, 30 years ago, you know, when it's like, you know, phone calls would be all in video all the time and all that stuff, you know, and then you flash forward to a time where we have that ability, and most of the time people still prefer not to use it because they don't want to be seen while they're, you know, messaging and talking, so, you know.
Speaking of that, you know, I finally saw the movie Blade Runner for the first time. Did you know that took place last year?
Yeah, I know, right?
And they had like, flying cars with CRT monitors in them. It was
this
interesting mashup of...
We were supposed to have
those
Back
to the Future.
Yeah.
That was, what, 2015?
Yeah, we were supposed to have those flying skateboards, but I still haven't gotten one of those yet, so...
Yeah, but I love the mashup of, like, old technology and stuff we don't have yet, because... Well, nobody's used a CRT monitor for ages at this point, but we still don't have, like, you know, replicatable humans and robots and all that. Well, I guess we do have robots, but they don't really look like us.
That you know of.
That is true. Are you a robot? You have to
Could
tell
be.
Me if you are.
I don't know, although, you know, of the many, many people that we have met, there are some who I have met who could have been robots. You know, I'd believe it if I found out after the fact that they were.
Yeah. I know,
yeah.
I think I know who you're talking about.
There's always a couple of those people out there who you're kind of wondering, like, are they actually talking or is that their programming? Yeah, but speaking
or
of technology...
Who's like just too unreal to be a real person?
There are a bunch of those out there. But yeah, so speaking of technology, though, one of the good things about it is, you know, during, you know, this whole situation where we're all pretty much having to, you know, stay inside and watch ourselves, you know, I think in some ways, though, you know, creatively, it's brought a lot of us together much closer. And actually, one thing I want to talk about a little bit and read a couple things from before we get into the last, you know, two open readers we have for the night is, you know, one of the workshops that we did on, you know, BardCon Virtual, which was a Japanese Mondo collaborative poetry workshop. And for those of you who don't know what the Mondo is, we do explain it on BardConVirtual.com. But basically, it's a poem written between two people. The first half of it is a question, and the second half of it is an answer. And so one poet writes the question verse, and the second poet answers it with the answer. There are, you know, guideline restrictions when it comes to syllables. Typically, it's 19 syllables or less, and it would be basically a six-line poem total. So you'd have 3 lines in the first stanza, 3 lines in the second stanza. You know, either 5-7-5 or 5-7-7 or a combination of that usually doesn't always necessarily stick to that. I mean, you know, in Japanese poetry, fives and sevens are pretty much, you know, almost every verse of poetry is a five or a seven, just because in that language that's how it works well. But, you know, in English or other languages, as long as you follow the 19 syllables, it's fine. You know, Mondo is written kind of in the spirit of Zen, you know, meditation, observation, nature, etc., something along those lines. And so we had a workshop where we had 40 poets actually do these. And we got some amazing, amazing results in terms of, you know, one would put forth the question and then another poet, usually one that they didn't know because these people were coming from all over, you know, pretty much all over the place, you know, like, you know, lots of different states in America and a couple of people in other countries as well. And we got some amazing stuff from that. So I was thoroughly impressed, and I just kind of wanted to read a couple of them that we had here before we got into, the last two recordings. So this one is actually by two people who were previously on, you know, our show. One of them down in Virginia, John Dutton, and one of them up in Connecticut, Sarah Ritter. And the first stanza is John Dutton's, the second stanza is Sarah Ritter's. So John's stanza was, virtual teaching, sign of the apocalypse or passing phase? And Sarah's response was, it's a phase proving people who still crave knowledge will find ways to learn.
Oh, that's good.
I know. You know, and the funny thing about seeing these is if I happen to know the poets any kind of, you know, to any kind of level, I could kind of, you know, you could kind of tell where the question is coming from and where the answer is coming from, you know. So, you know, I mean, John being a teacher, you know, of course he would be doing one about, you know, virtual teaching because that's been on everybody's mind right now. And, yeah, I love that, and I love the answer, you know.
Yeah.
So, and of course, there's a lot of these have something to do with isolation or virtual or distancing or stuff like that. Or I can't imagine why this is on a lot of people's minds right now. You know, it's just one of those things, you know, I don't know. But this next one is by Megan McDonald. You know, Megan, the other co-facilitator of Poets Anonymous down by you, and Jamie Ann Colangelo, who's up here on Long Island with me. She's part of the Samantha's Little Bit of Heaven workshop, and both of them have been on the show, too. So Megan's question verse was, when time is finite and walls surround isolate, how then can words soar? And Jamie's response was, words, not bound by time, nor by walls built to contain, soar via sound waves.
That's also a good answer, too. I'm sensing a theme of, like, starting out with and maybe it's because of this thing that's on everybody's mind, but almost like a somewhat negative question of, like, oh, no, how is this possible? And then the answer being just supremely uplifting.
Yeah, I know. I've been seeing that a lot, too. And, yeah, there's been, you know, a lot of those questions, but people have been coming up with good answers. And one thing that I found with this collaborative poetry, and a lot of other people said the same thing, is it kind of, you know, beat the heck out of the writer's block I was having. Because, you know, during this whole thing, I was trying to write, you know, poems. I'm like, well, I'm going to be productive and write a lot of poems during this. But I had, like, maybe six poems I got, like, two lines into and just wasn't going anywhere. So, but doing the collaborative stuff, you know, I ended up getting, like, you know, an entire book's worth filled of poems, you know, with people doing it that way. So it was, you know, I think that people having the thing to go off of has been really helpful, you know. And I'm also reading one, you know, for the listeners, I'm just reading one of these back and forth because with the workshop, everybody started a poem and then they also answered a poem. So you kind of got two complete poems from each of these pairs. Going to read one more of these pairs that's up here. And then maybe, you know, you and I can read ours, Nick.
Maybe.
We'll have to, you know, check the commercial rights for that. But so this one is by Christina M.R. Norcross and Jeannie E. Roberts. These two are actually friends who knew each other from Wisconsin, and they wanted to do this together. And both of them have also been on the show before. So Christina's question verse was, how long must the earth seek a sacred time of love while its people spin blindly? And Jeannie's response was, to love is to heal. Like love, the earth is patient. She awaits divine timing.
I like that one. And it's continuing our theme of very positive or uplifting answers.
Yeah, agreed. You know, and also, I think one of the ones that you and I wrote, you came in with a positive answer to my question. Do you have it in front of you, or?
Yeah. Why don't you read your question, and I'll read my answer.
Okay, so this is the Mondo that Nick and I, or one of the Mondos that Nick and I did for this workshop. So here's my question. How much potential, energy, never kinetic, has been wasted?
And I answered, Potential held cannot be wasted. Each moment, endless possibility.
Yeah, and I really like that answer.
Well, thank you. Me too, because I wrote it. So,
yeah, that always helps.
I'll read the question that I posed to you. How long must I wait before waiting becomes wasting?
And then my response to you was, how quick can action, deliberate and focused, change everything?
Yeah, I like that response. Again,
so yeah,
with the
theme of... It does seem like through a lot of these there was the theme of a somewhat, you know, doom question, and then, you know, as Tolkien would call it, the eucatastrophe answer.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, the eucatastrophe, that was kind of a word that, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien, author of Lord of the Rings, invented, which was, you know, because we all know the word catastrophe, which is, you know, when something bad happens out of nowhere, but he coined the phrase eucatastrophe, which is basically the opposite, where everything just seems horrible, then out of nowhere you get, like, you know, the sun comes out of the clouds, and everything instantly gets better, because we do have, obviously we have both, and for so long there was only the word for the one side, which kind of seems, you know, almost catastrophic in itself.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, that was the Mondo, the workshop that we did. There is going to actually be a book produced from the 40 poems that we got from that. Which is also going to actually include, you know, the instructions of how to do a Mondo. And if you happen to be a poetry workshop leader or a professor or a teacher of poetry, it's all going to have, like, exercises in the back of the book of how you could actually do a similar, you know, Mondo workshop. Because it came out really well, and it actually inspired some other creative collaboration projects, like the Poetic Bridges, which I'll give a plug at the very end of this episode. But before we do that, let's get to the remaining two readers. The next one up is the calendar man for the Performance Poets Association here on Long Island, Jack Zaffos. He's been on the show before, too, and so let's give him another listen.
This is from We Are Beat, the National Beat Poetry Foundation anthology. This poem is entitled Own It. And I'm going to dedicate this poem to my friend Albert Diaz. There are voices within that are yours, the ones that speak to you, saying, bring me forth. Speak the words for those who can hear, for the listening ears and hungry hearts. The pen is in your hand for a reason. Let it slide on the paper and let the words flow. Some of us must bear witness to the burning bush that speaks and calls us forth. Some of us must bear witness to the struggling and the tears. Right now, that is you. Own it.
Yeah, I always love the way that Jack reads. And, yeah, that was from, you know, one of the Beat Festival anthologies that we do every year up with the National Beat Poetry Foundation based in New Hartford, Connecticut. So glad
to... that's one of my favorite of Jack's poems. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, no, I did too. I mean, it's hard to pick a favorite of Jack's poems, honestly. But yeah, that one's definitely up there for me. That was really nice.
Well, that is why I said one of. But, yeah, I mean, it's sort of it's a positive message, but almost in, like, a tough love kind of way.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You know, we're all about positive messages right now, so.
Yeah, definitely.
So the final reader we have is Alex Edward Boudreau, which I think this is either the third or the fourth time he's been on the show. Very prolific poet and very powerful poet, so let's give it up for Alex.
This poem appears in the 2018 issue of Bard's Annual. As They Fall by Alex Edwards Boudreau. Imagine each leaf a life, or part of one, each one rife with colorful fragility and desperate agility. Or imagine each a thought, luminous, lazy, and fraught, a twisting, aimless, silent cry against an endless azure sky. Destiny postponed, in soft, invisible swirls they waft, somersault, and catch the light, then settle gently out of sight.
You know, I remember actually hearing that at Bard's Day 2018, and, you know, I remember being impressed with the rhyme scheme and how naturally it, you know, it flowed, and I just had that same thought listening to that now.
Yeah, it's great, and there was something about that reading that was just very calming and relaxing. I think every time Alex has been on this show, I say that, because there's something about his voice that when he reads a poem, like, it could be about a famous battle, and I think I would still be relaxed.
Yeah, we'll have to try to talk him into putting together some kind of an audio book for one of his books.
Yeah.
So that's all the quote-unquote open readers that we had this evening, because it was, you know, a virtual open, but only open in the sense that there was no theme anthology around there, because everybody, you know, obviously these were all sent in advance. Unless you want to believe they were all live, you know, you can, but somehow I don't.
Well, it was open until, like, this morning.
This is true. So I want to thank all the readers who had called in. Before we end, I'm going to give just quick little testimonial about that project that I promised I'd get back to at the end, which is Poetic Bridges, which is, we had so much success with the Mondo Collaborative Workshop and some other things that I was just doing on my own Facebook wall, that we decided actually right now and, you know, during everything that's going on in the world, that, you know, it would be really kind of cool and important to maybe bridge a few gaps and actually do some collaborative poetry between poets in America and poets in other countries. And so for the last, like, week or so, I've been gathering poets who are interested from the United Kingdom, from Canada, New Zealand, Australia, Greece, Sweden, Germany, Romania, and a few other places. Got a whole bunch of them who were interested in doing it, and now we're starting to pair them with American poets to kind of do a similar setup to the Mondo collaboration you just heard. Not exactly the same, because the verses are going to be 6 lines instead of 3, and they won't have that strict syllable structure, but along the same lines. So if anybody here is listening and you want to get in on that, I would encourage you to go to the Local Gems Poetry Press website, look under Poetic Bridges, because there are a limited number of slots for this, and they're filling up relatively quickly because a lot of people want to get in on this. And, really excited about this book because it's going to be read all over the place. So I'm definitely excited about that.
Yeah, I am too. And getting to see the collaboration between people, not just in different communities, but in different countries and cultures, is going to be awesome.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you, everybody, again, for calling in. Definitely check out Poetic Bridges, and also keep on checking out BardConVirtual.com because it's still up and there's still content being added to it. Once again, I'm James P. Wagner.
And I'm Nick Hale.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. Yes, I said it first. See, this is how thankful we are. We're competing over who gets to say thank you first and last.
Exactly.
So keep checking back.